We are now being joined by Bob Duff. He is Connecticut's the holder of Connecticut's 25th Senate seat. He's also our House Majority Leader. Bob, welcome back to ICC.
Thank you very much. How are you? Senate Majority Leader, not House, but...
Senate Majority Leader. I didn't mean to downgrade you, Mr. Duff.
No.
I'm just kidding.
They kicked me out of the House.
kicked you out. listen, Bob, you know, this election is, you know, I'm sure you're all aware of the poll numbers when it comes to the two big races between, for governor and for Senate. The gap in the female vote is astounding. And, you know, Democrats have very much made this race about a woman's right to choose. And you even went so far as to also bring up, protection for all citizens from gun violence. Those are two very good campaign issues. And the other side has again, sort of dived into the culture war a lot with the transgender kids. Does it amaze you that these guys aren't more focused on the economy, or do you think there's just not enough material there outside of inflation?
Well, look, I think that if you, for your listeners, you look at a state that now has a budget surplus. We've had a budget surplus now for many years. We have a rainy day fund that is at its legal limit. We are paying down pensions for the third year in a row, and that's like paying down your mortgage. It's now giving us another $400 million in operating room because we were paying down those pensions that have not been paid down for 70 years. After actually paying our pension over the last 12 years now, and we've been upgraded by Wall Street, our bonds. So when you talk about the economy, I think there's a lot of good news for the people of Connecticut. In fact, you know, in our budget this year, democratically written budget, we did have a few Republican votes, but most of the Republicans voted against it. And we passed $600 million of tax cuts. And that went directly into the pockets of people all across the state of Connecticut. So when, you know, the Republican candidates for governor, the U.S. Senate, try to talk about the economy, there's just not that bad news that they can point to that gives them any kind of an edge, because they have to acknowledge the fact that we are paying down our pension debt, we have a full rainy day fund, we have surpluses, our bond rating has gone up. So there's just nothing for them to talk about that's a negative, outside the fact that when they had Republican governors, that's when we amassed a lot of this debt. And so I think that we've got a good story to tell. We've got tax cuts to talk about. We're helping people. Our unemployment rate is very low. Our economy is moving full speed ahead. People are moving into the state like crazy. Those are all good things in my book.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. And again, it's occurred to me as I'm following the races here, and I'm thinking to myself, well, I would make a bigger deal about that. And then I think to myself, like, I paid $2.93 yesterday for gas. Still not where I'd like it to be, Bob, but I paid $3.10 the week before. I paid $3.22 the week before that. I see every time I go to the gas station, I see when I go to the store, everything's starting to drop again. And I think that spells really bad news for the Republicans. And
well, that's what we predicted, yeah. Actually. We knew, you know, gas prices are a commodity like everything else. Things can go up and down, and they may go back up again. Who knows? But because of the fact that we have offered free bus service for folks that are taking that, and buses have never been more full. We have a 25-cent gas tax reduction right now that people are able to save hundreds of dollars over since April with gas taxes. That's provided some real relief to folks. We have the child tax credit that a number of families took advantage of this year that put real money in pockets of families, $250 per child. We're doing everything we can to help families. We've increased the property tax credit for senior citizens. We've increased the earned income tax credit for the working poor. We are working, you know, on doing everything we can to increase education funding and municipal funding to help out the middle class. so that their property taxes don't go up. Many municipalities saw extra funding in there to help on car tax relief. So here in Connecticut, we are working very, very hard to help a lot of folks. And the fact is that we talked about earlier this year that supply chain issues would start getting straightened out very soon. We thought that gasoline prices would come down once the refineries are back up and running again post-pandemic, and that we would see some of these reductions. But again, things can go back up again. But I think there's been a concerted effort on both the federal and the state government to do everything possible to bring down prices as much as we can and much as we can control. Some of it's national, internationally controlled, but the small parts that we have control over, we want to try and do what we can to help.
We're talking to State Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff. Bob, yesterday in talking to some Republicans, I brought up the fact I paid just $2.93 for gas, and right away they did the, well, you know, it's going to go right up after the election. It always does, which, again, sort of, you know, in their fantasy world, you know, maybe it's Joe Biden, maybe it's Ned Lamont, maybe it's Bob Duff, that you guys are manipulating and controlling the price of gas just to win elections. It's a brilliant strategy, by the way.
I wish I had that kind of power because, you know, if I had that kind of power, I could use that in so many different ways for good. And I didn't know I controlled the international oil markets and gasoline markets. That's news to me. I'm certain that Ned Lamont doesn't have that kind of power either, nor does Joe Biden. But again, a lot of this stuff, you know, all these things are always complicated, and it's complicated as to why things go up, complicated why things go down. There's never an answer for anything. But basically, it was once the economy got moving again and people really started going back to work, the refineries had to start producing oil again. They stopped producing oil, and a lot of companies stopped exploring, doing exploration, stopped doing the leasing of the land, and all those kinds of things. And so it's almost like a trade. A locomotive starting up again. It starts up slowly, 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 and it gets moving and gets a little more, you know, gets faster, faster, faster as it goes. And that's pretty much what's been happening. And that's, I think, on the supply chain, on oil and gas prices. I think all those things are the case. And so, you know, there's probably, so like I said, could things still go back up? Absolutely. But I would hope that, and I believe that the worst is behind us, and that we're starting now to get back into more normalcy and a little more of what we would expect in gas prices and every other kind of commodity price, a little more stability, because we haven't had that stability for a long time. But look, we haven't been through a pandemic in 100 years, and this is this is a pandemic unlike we've ever seen before in modern times. So there's no playbook on, you know, how this all works out in the end. But I think that we've all worked very hard to manage it as best as we can, and to manage it in a way that that acknowledges that it's been tough for a lot of people, and to try and do everything we can to mitigate those difficulties with tax relief and other strategies to bring prices down.
My guest is State Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff. Bob, appreciate you. You always give me your time, and I really do appreciate that very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate that, too.
Of course. Now, yesterday, the United States Supreme Court declined to hear the appeal by the Connecticut State Police Union, who was challenging the police accountability law that allows public disclosure of certain state trooper personnel files and internal investigation reports. Can we talk a little bit about police accountability, why this law is in place, and explain what exactly, because I'm not really buying the reason here unsubstantiated allegations would become public, but it would also show up that it was unsubstantiated. So I'm not necessarily buying that. Can we talk about police accountability? Bob, Big Bob's been waiting in on that. He's trying to make that an issue now. We got to protect the police as opposed to, you know, the citizens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that the Supreme Court decided not to hear it. It sounds like the State Police Union lost pretty much at every avenue they went to, and then just tried to go up to the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court said, thanks, but no. You know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for our state police, our troopers who work hard every day on our highways and do lots of other work. I've done lots of ride-alongs with state troopers over the years. and see exactly what they do and how difficult their job is. But I thought that when we passed the police accountability bill back in 2020, that this was the bill was a balance, and it's a balancing act of accountability, and it's a balancing act of respecting the hard work and the role that law enforcement plays in our daily lives. So I tremendously respect the work that law enforcement does. I do agree with the accountability bill because I think everybody needs to be held accountable to what they do. Nobody's above the law, and we have to make sure that we're doing everything we can to provide confidence to the people of the state of Connecticut when it comes to law enforcement. But in turn, what that does is that provides greater respect and admiration for those who serve us, like our state troopers. So, again, it's a balancing act of making sure that they are held accountable in a way that that respects the 98-99% of our troopers who go to work every day, work hard, do the right thing, and want to just get home to their families. You want to always, you don't want to have the 1% ruin the bunch, you know, be the bad apple in the bunch there. So I think these kinds of things are important. As a matter of fact, if you look at like even municipal police departments, you know, in Norwalk, we've had a couple officers who, because of the police accountability bill, have been, you know, they've had investigations on some bad acts that they've done. They've been stripped of being police officers. They've been decertified. They'll never be police officers again. I think that gives good accountability to the rest of the police officers who do a good and decent job and work hard to protect the people of the city of Norwalk. And that's what we should be. That's what we should expect and hope. And that's why we want to make sure there's accountability.
You know, it's sort of like when people say, you know, look, don't run, don't resist from the cops. Right. This is to me sort of the same thing. It's like if you're a police officer who's not abusing your power, if you are not being reckless out there with the people you're dealing with, you have nothing to worry about. But for the ones that do, and it seems to me, Bob, and the ones that tend to get in trouble, it's not like, oh, wow, we didn't see that coming. It's like, oh, this guy's been reprimanded three times before. It's generally that's the situation, it seems like.
Right. So it's, again, it's like 1%, if that. You know, the 99% of the people who serve in law enforcement serve because they want to serve our communities. They want to make a difference. They've been called to service. They just want to do their job. They want to do it well and effectively. They don't want others ruining their occupation, and they want to get home to their families and earn a living and put food on the table like everybody else does. And that's what this bill does. So I never really understood why the state police union was taking this dramatic step on this. It was certainly their right to, but my guess as a non-lawyer, I would have predicted that this was the end result that would have happened.
We're talking to State Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff. Bob, the 5th Congressional District is getting kind of tight, we know, between Javonna Hayes and George Logan. George will actually be on this afternoon with Paul Pacelli. I'm actually talking to the Hayes campaign right now. I think we're going to get her here on Thursday. Women's rights, women's reproductive rights are very much on the ballot. And earlier today, I might have chastised the audience here a little bit because of there's such a misconception about abortion. I hear often it be confused with contraception or that it's used in place of contraception. And so I suggested that it would be a really good idea for people to sort of tune in and hear what's being said at this roundtable discussion, because obviously, look, people have very passionate feelings about abortion. They don't usually have the facts to make an informed enough decision on this. And as I pointed out, there's a reason why Republicans are getting hammered by 30 points with the female vote, because it's a very important issue. And it's a lot more nuanced than the black and white of you're killing a baby. You're not killing a baby. What are your thoughts on Kamala Harris coming here? Obviously, the fifth's getting tight. And just about abortion in general, it's obviously become a huge issue in the state. Just kind of let them have it, Bob.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a woman's right to choose is one of the biggest issues we have in this election. The Dobbs decision just flew in the face of 50 years of precedent and really moved our country back. But let's not be fooled for a second that this is the we're one and done here. The Supreme Court, this radical Supreme Court, who were put in by an extreme MAGA group of people, not only want to take away a woman's right to choose, they're already talking about a national abortion ban. We're already hearing about maybe taking away banning contraceptives. I mean, just let that sink in for a second, banning contraceptives, and taking away equality issues like same-sex marriage and whether somebody can marry somebody of a different race than they are. I mean, this is not me. This is not hyperbole. This is not me exaggerating. These are things that have been talked about in Republican circles. And, you know, we've had bill and people say, oh, in Connecticut, there's no chance that any of this stuff can get rolled back in Connecticut. I'm like, well, that's not true. Not that long ago, we had a tie Senate. We had a 18-18 Senate. We had a House that had, I think maybe had a 5-seat Democratic majority.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're only one election away from losing our rights here in the state of Connecticut. So it's really important for people to vote their values, whether it's on abortion rights, whether it's on gun control, whatever the issue is, vote your values. And so, you know, for the Republicans, you don't hear them really talking about this very much, except for Lindsey Graham. Thankfully for Lindsey Graham, because what we know is they kept saying that this was a states' rights issue. This should go back to the states. Let the states decide this. What we really know is that they really want to have a national ban on abortion. So if the House goes Republican, you could bet, and it doesn't matter what George Logan or any of the other Republicans talk about here in Connecticut, that they'll vote against it. They will still be able to put Kevin McCarthy in as their speaker. Marjorie Taylor Greene will have an important and powerful position in the United States Congress. Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, all the kind of crazies out there will have important positions because they're the ones who are supporting, you know, these radical agendas. Jim Jordan, he's a ranking member on Judiciary right now. These guys, I don't know if you've never heard of them, if your listeners never heard of them, these are radical and dangerous people. These are extreme MAGA Republicans, election deniers. These are the ones who mm-hmm. want to have these national abortion ban. These are the ones who want to roll back rights. They want to roll back gun control. They want to roll back women's right to choose. They want to roll back contraceptives. They want to roll back whether or not somebody should be able to marry the person that they love, whether they're a different race or if they're the same-sex couples. They want to take this country to, like, this Christian nationalist, fundamentalist country and not respect separation of church and state. These are dangerous, dangerous people who want to take us to a place we have not ever been to in this country. So if you know, voters need to be thinking about all these kinds of issues when they go to the polls on November the 8th.
Bob, Lauren Boebert went so far as to call separation of church and state stupid. That is kind of scary. State Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff, thank you as always for your time and for your thoughts. Much appreciated. We'll reach out to you again just before the election. We've got Bill on the line. Bill, what can I do for you?
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, good. So, look, I think you're spot on that this is a situation that everyone has created with their complaints and their procrastination. But what are you proposing as a solution? How do we address the issues in the court, et cetera?
Well, again, my whole thing, Bill, is I'm trying to have conversations. I'm trying to understand both sides of the topic. I think people don't understand the nuance and why people are so passionate about a topic that you might view as awful. You might think, oh, abortion's murder. It's terrible. Ask the majority of women in Connecticut their thoughts on it, and they'll tell you something completely different. And it would be easy for you to dismiss it and be like, that's ridiculous. That's just some liberal ideology. But don't you want to understand where people are coming from? I spend a lot of time talking to my Second Amendment friends about their passion and their feelings for guns. I totally understand it. I think most liberals don't understand the way people feel about guns on the right. It's a complete disconnect. And I'm trying to have conversations where we use factual information to talk about the topics so that we can all gain a better understanding of why people think different than we do. I think that's the first step. The second one is, and I keep talking about this, bringing the respect factor back. So when people call up and aren't brave enough like you are, Bill, to come on the air and talk to me about it, I get upset by that. I think that's cowardly and weak. I'm here and I'm happy to talk. Sorry, what are you saying?
One of the big challenges that we face is that, in my humble opinion, all sources of information are not equal. And there's a lot of information. And I heard you mention that you don't listen to CNN or you get your information from other sources. Many people now get their information, and I believe it's not qualified information, from social media, the internet,
yes,
and other sources. And they, you know, the signal to noise ratio on those various platforms, you know, it's not qualified sources. So, you know, unfortunately today, everyone becomes a source of media. And then those sources of media become, to them, you know, the gold standard, which is unfortunate because, as you might say, whether it's gun control or abortion or what have you, and all of a sudden everyone feels that their source is the bona fide truth and the other source, whatever it might be, whether it's a left source or a right source, is immediately discounted as nonsense, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, again, and this is why I feel like when we can have these kinds of conversations and we could sort of talk these things out, there are places where there's just factual information that shows statistics of studies and polls and things like that. I'm looking for factual information. I don't give a crap what people think about things. I don't. To me, it comes down to the science or the math or, again, whatever the statistical factual information about a topic is. I don't know that we can do anything better than that. It's easy to judge things. It's easy to decide, oh, I don't like that. No one should like that. But that's not how it works. And so that's what I've been working towards. Here's the other thing I've done, Bill. I've spent a lot of time over the last 2 weeks bringing in independent and libertarian candidates because everybody always complains it's the lesser of two evils. 42% of Connecticut is independent. If every independent voted for the independent party, you wouldn't have a Democrat or a Republican in any seat in Connecticut.
Yeah, that's true. And unfortunately, I think in many ways the two-party system has reached a point where it's done the country a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
I feel there are many people out there who are socially liberal, fiscally conservative, and feel that neither party, neither the Republican nor the Democrat, is serving them particularly well. And so they end up feeling somewhat lost by both.
You're talking to one of those people. That is exactly the way I feel.
Right. And I also feel that the way the Supreme Court has been stacked has left us in a position where the court is now representing not even a plurality, but a small minority of the country. And it's unclear where their agenda comes from. So, I listened to you before, and you'll excuse me, your rant about people, you know, not speaking up. But it feels as if the court is driving an agenda of some other minority. And it's, you know, I guess one of the challenges here is to find out how the government, because it is our government, it's your government and mine and everyone who listens to your show, but how, you know, the agenda of the court and the government can be aligned to serve the people.
Yeah, Bill, first and foremost, I am very ranty, so I take no offense at that description of my delivery. I appreciate that, and I do thank you for listening. Right now, we're also in an interesting position because the government itself is being led by, right, Democrats in the White House, Democrats have the House, Democrats have the Senate, and then you look over here at the Supreme Court, which... shortly, I'm going to get into some statistics about the Supreme Court and the numbers, just trust and the way people feel about the Supreme Court. It's not great. I think when you look at the Democratic Party and most of their policies, it's about 50-50, right, with people on the other side, right and left. But when it comes to the Supreme Court, a vast majority of the country, 59%, say it's out of touch with today's America. And so, again, I think it's worth having the conversations about, you know?
Yeah, look, we have a Congress, a White House, which is being led by a group of people who are, you know, candidly quite old.
Mm-hmm.
They don't represent the majority of the populace. And we really, as a country, we really need to consider putting some candidates who are younger and represent the majority of the population. And look, maybe we'll get a little mean reversion over time. Look, we've gotten what we've elected. And, you know, if we don't make a change, we're going to get what we deserve.
Bill, I appreciate that. That's my other big stance on this is we keep electing the same people, Democrats and Republicans. You know the people I'm talking about, same ones year after year. And we scratch our heads like, huh, how come we can't get out of this? How come it's the same? Because that's what we're doing.
We get what we pay for.
There you go. So, again, I've made a big push on I want to introduce people to the independence bill because, you know, you go into the ballot booth, right? You see Stefanowski, you see Lamont, and you're like, I'll pick one of those guys. And there's like four other names on the ballots, and you don't know who any of those people are. They don't have a chance to get your vote. I thought I would at least give those folks the floor and at least make them a viable option for people like me who are like, I don't want Ned Lamont, and I don't want Bob Stefanowski. I voted for Oz Griebel in 2018 because he was the only guy qualified to be the governor of Connecticut, in my opinion.
Right. Well, there's three things that get people elected in this country. You know the three. Money, money, and money.
Yes.
And, you know, and hopefully, you know, with a little bit of smart publicity and the right amount of money, we can make some change. Thank you for your rants. And we'll keep listening.
Bill, I appreciate the call. You see what a nice person I am? I am just here looking to engage and debate with you. I've said this before. Bill brought up another good point. He said, what is my solution? I don't have all the solutions to all the problems. I wish I did. But here's what I do know. I do know that We can't have extremist views on either side. And the reason that we can't, especially here in Connecticut, is because 42% of the state is independent. We don't have to tolerate that anymore. The idea that these politicians are lying to us. I was laughing earlier about this stupid commercial between Stefanowski and Lamont. Ned Lamont said he was going to lower property taxes. Well, he doesn't have the ability to do that, even if he lied and said he was going to. And then Bob said, as well, he lied. What? You guys are arguing and making stuff up about something he couldn't do, he didn't do, and now you're angry that he lied that he didn't do it because he couldn't do it. Let's talk about inflation. Let's talk about the actual issues. Let's talk about home heating oil. Or as Terry Cowgill said earlier, for the first time in decades, affordable housing has finally gotten a mention on the campaign trail. I understand, look, the Democrats aren't exactly bragging about the way they're doing things. That's why they've made this very much about cultural issues. And the Republicans have followed them right into the rabbit hole. Only some of their extremist views, they're just not going to play out well. That's what I'm trying to explain. I think the Republicans have mishandled this entire election cycle. 100% have blown this. You had think about, Terry Cowgill just texted me, the fighting 5th district is now being called, according to Politico.com, it is now being called a toss-up. That's how close things have gotten in the 5th district. There are serious issues at play here. What's going to decide that election ultimately? I don't know. We got like 6 weeks to find out. 203-333-WICC, 203-333-9422. If you want to call up, you want to yell at me, you want to argue with me, you want to tell me there's things you didn't like that I said, I'll sit here quietly, I'll give you the floor, I'll let you say your piece, and then I'll respond. I had a great conversation there with Bill. I really appreciate the call, and I'm always excited to talk to the ICC listeners. I grew up in this state like you did. I'm a big fan of this radio station like you are. I love the state of Connecticut. I love America. I'm just tired of being lied to. I'm divorced and remarried. Do you know what the difference between my first marriage is and my second? In my first marriage, I had a wife that lied a lot. My current wife, Jessica, who's amazing and who I love very much, despite her being a liberal Democrat, she knows I don't put up with lying, won't tolerate it. That's why we've been together now for 12 years. It's working out great. I hold my candidates the same I hold up my wife to, that same standard. If you lie to me, you're out. I don't like Donald Trump because he's a big liar. I voted for Joe Biden because I expected him to restore some sort of dignity and respect to the White House. He's failed miserably. The way that the Biden administration has dealt with the media, particularly with right-wing media, is as embarrassing to me as Donald Trump's conduct with left-wing media. You have to be a big boy to be the president of the United States. You would think these guys in their late 70s would be mature enough to stop acting like 10-year-olds. As Bill said, it's time we get younger. It's time we start picking better candidates. That way, 5 years from now, when I'm on here screaming about all this stuff, we can be like, well, look, we tried. We went out there. We got some better candidates. Let's see where we are at that point. But you no longer have to tolerate politicians caught on camera telling a lie and then denying it to your face? Come on. We're better than that. We deserve better than that. And if you keep voting for that, you deserve exactly what you get.